In light of what went on with schools during COVID, homeschooling is increasingly becoming a consideration for families across the country. But do they understand what the essence of homeschooling really is? There's also a lot of seasoned homeschoolers who don't want school choice. We're going to talk about why that is and more on this special Blue-Haired Conservatives episode of Subtle Rampage Podcast. Let's get into it.
Warning, the following program contains critical thinking, honest opinions, viewpoints on culture that may seem conservative, and a positive view on absolute detestable things such as marriage and children. Listener discretion is advised.
Back to Subtle Rampage Podcast, where I discuss the things that I feel like discussing. Sometimes those are things of a political nature, sometimes they're things of a cultural nature. But, you know, we just go with the flow, whatever I feel like talking about. My name is Adelia Kirchner, and this is my fellow blue-haired conservative and best friend of almost 8 years, Shauna Husky, and she is joining me for this episode. Woo! Anyways, if you have been keeping up with the podcast like you should be, then you know that both Shauna and I are homeschool alumni. Shauna graduated high school in 2018, and I followed suit in 2020, unfortunately. So we're not super directly involved in the homeschool community at the moment. Mm-hmm. However, we both still have younger siblings who very much are, and homeschooling mothers who very much are.
Yeah.
I have 6 younger siblings. One just graduated high school, so technically he's a homeschool alumni now too. So I have 5 younger siblings who are still homeschooled.
And yeah, I have 2 younger siblings. One just graduated, mm-hmm. so she is joining the alumni club. But I still have a younger sister who just started high school, so...
Throughout the amount of time that we have been homeschooled and the amount of time that our parents, our moms specifically, have been homeschooling, things have shifted a lot.
Yes.
Especially in the last few years because of things that have happened during COVID. There's been a lot more people who have deemed themselves homeschoolers. Sometimes that's an accurate term for what they're doing. Sometimes it's not. But yeah, my homeschool mother, she homeschooled me from the get-go. Mm-hmm. So she's been doing this for, I guess, pretty much like 2 decades now.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much, yeah.
Because homeschooling moms, usually the education starts before your quote-unquote school age.
Yeah.
They find the education in everything. That's why they call a lot of things field trips, is because they are making it educational. Trust me.
Yeah. It's not just saying, oh, let's go to the grocery store and it's a field trip. We're just going to get groceries.
No,
like, there's more to it.
It's like, go to the grocery store. It's going to be a field trip. You're going to learn how to, like,
calculate taxes
and shop, like, on a budget. And yeah like, you're going to learn.
Yes.
But yeah, so my mom, and I guess your mom too, is what mm-hmm. we would kind of call, they're kind of veteran homeschool moms, okay?
They've been
around the block for a hot minute. And I guess now at this point too, our moms have both graduated 2 homeschool students from high school and pushed them into their adult lives when it comes to education. But like I said, a lot has changed in recent years, and I think how schools and school districts and just the government in general handled COVID, it has a lot to do with how many people are now homeschooling.
Yeah.
You know, some parents were scared to send their kids to school. Some of them saw their children being left behind because everything was online for so long, and they were like, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm.
My kid should not be struggling this much. He should not be being held back because of this. But yeah, so and then some people, they just because of the online learning and the access that they now had to their kids' teachers, their kids' classrooms, they were starting to realize some of the insanity that can occur in a school classroom when there are no parents around. So a whole variety of reasons that mm-hmm. you have a bunch of people now homeschooling. You know, I think both me and Shauna, I assume you agree with me on this, we're all 4 people pulling their kids out of public schools.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I even have college professors I've had conversations with who are pulling their kids out to homeschool them.
Mm-hmm.
So if college professors are doing it.
Yeah, the ones who like literally spent like a huge chunk of their life in academia purposefully to then stay in the realm of academia.
Yeah.
If they're pulling their kids out, you should probably pull your kid out. Not that they're the experts, but
it's kind of the telltale sign, in my opinion.
Yeah.
To the general public.
But, yeah, so, you know, it's not that we're against people pulling their kids out of public schools. I think that's something that's needed to happen for a long time now. And at the rate that it's happening, I'm happy. Like, people need to be doing this. Because at the end of the day, okay, you can try to, like, shine up and polish public schools, but you can do that for the next half century, but public schools are still going to be government-run, inefficient school systems.
Yeah.
It's just the reality.
And government schools.
Yeah. It's the government educating your children.
Mm-hmm. And since when did we trust the government?
Yeah.
On either side of the political aisle. Trust the government?
Since when did you trust the government? Great question. Great question. But yeah, like that's something, that's why I call them government schools.
I call them government schools.
Yeah, because people forget that that is who is in charge of the public school system. It's the government. Mm-hmm. And do you want the government running your child's life, pretty much? Yeah,
I've actually gotten to many arguments with people over calling it a government school.
Really?
Yeah, just like, no, it's not. And it's just like, who teaches the kids? who provides the curriculum?
I'm like, the government is what everything goes through. I'm like,
yeah, that's the regulation that your children are getting educated through.
Yeah. So it's just, it's one of those things. People have an issue with it. I just view it as the reality. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it is good to be pulling your kids out of public schools, but I think the problem comes in when new homeschoolers, they don't realize the struggle and effort that a lot of veteran homeschoolers have gone through simply to have the freedom and the right to homeschool their kids.
Right.
Like, even our moms were coming in on the brink of it, you know, like, things were finally starting to be, like, okay, but there was still so much stigma. But the generation, like, the generation of homeschooling parents, like, right before our moms, they are the reason that homeschooling is legal still.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, like, don't really fully recognize, like, just how easy it is for homeschooling rights to just be taken away. A lot of states still have, like, major, major restrictions on how you can homeschool, which defeats a lot of the purpose of homeschooling. You're supposed to have the freedom to teach your children in the way that you see fit. Not always the case. And you have so many people against homeschooling. Okay, like that one lady from Harvard who I've been meaning to do a podcast about. I will do it at some point.
You need to do a podcast.
I promise. It's on my list. It just hasn't hit priority in my brain, apparently. But there is this PhD lady who wrote a whole dissertation on why we should ban homeschooling in the US. And it pretty much could be summed up by her saying, we need to ban homeschooling because some people who homeschool their kids don't homeschool them and actually physically abuse them. That's what it can be summed up to. And I'm just kind of like, lady, you know how many public school students are being abused?
Yeah.
And it doesn't get found out? There's all sorts of situations.
And no one does anything about it? And no one when they know about the situation?
Yeah, there's stuff like that. And you know what? I personally know that I would not abuse my children. So I'm not giving up the right to educate my children based off of the fact that somebody out there might be a crappy person. Especially when, if homeschooling is banned, my option is to send my child to go get educated by somebody else. And there are so many things that can happen when your child is out of your care. I'm not personally comfortable with that.
Same here. Like, it terrifies me. Just from the little bit I have experienced in public schools, and then just other stories I've heard from fellow former public schoolers.
Yeah.
Like, no way.
I could literally make the same argument for public schools. I could be like, you know how many people get abused by their teachers? You know how many sexual assault situations there are with teachers and young students? Okay, yeah. just based off that, we should just ban public schools and private schools and every other educational model. Like, that, it's a stupid argument, but that's pretty much what this lady was saying. And Harvard held a whole anti-homeschool summit. Okay, it was a big freaking deal.
Yeah.
So I will do a podcast on that in the future. It's just, you know, I want to get it right.
it's a topic to get very heated very quickly on, just that, because you've lived as a homeschooler.
Yeah, and that dissertation is long. It's long.
Yeah.
Like, Shauna was in town when
I remember.
I printed that thing off, and it just kept printing and printing and printing. It was like this little thick stack, okay? And
I remember all the yellow highlighters. Yeah.
I went through and I highlighted everything that this woman was saying that was just absolute, like, crap. I was like, oh my god, I can't. I'm like, goodness gracious. But yeah, so there's a lot of that. And people don't realize just how difficult it was for people to get to where we are today with homeschooling. They really don't. So our main goal with this podcast episode, at least when I came up with the idea, it is just to walk through a few big things that it seems like new homeschoolers or people considering homeschooling or even just those outside of the homeschool community might not really understand when it comes to homeschooling. And so the first thing on that list is the difference in social expectations and social attitudes when it comes to public schoolers versus homeschoolers. Just the mannerisms, the social behavior of how they interact with other children, how they interact with adults. It's just very different. And so, yeah, it's just the difference between how homeschoolers operate versus how public schoolers operate. Like, I see a lot of newcomers who think that everything in homeschooling has to line up with everything in public schooling, like we talked about in a previous episode. Like, they think that it has to be public school
a certain
at
way.
Home.
Yeah. Definitely. Like, and it defeats the point of homeschooling.
Yeah.
Because homeschooling is meant to tailor to your child. And in, like, public schools, it's a generalized curriculum. It's not catered to your child specifically. And it's kind of like a hit or miss type deal. Whereas homeschooling, you have the opportunity to, like, know what your child's learning style is and how to teach them with that learning style.
Like, you don't have to carry over the grading systems from public school. You don't have to carry over the schedule. You don't have to use the same publisher or curriculum company like we talked about in our last episode. Like, there's not one right way to homeschool. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Is you can do it however works for you and your kids, you and your family. Like, there's a million different ways to learn. And so it's one of those things. You can piece it all together to make this, like, super efficient puzzle.
Yeah.
And then glue it together and put it on a frame on the wall. But you get this issue of culture, right? Because homeschoolers have, like, a different culture than people who go to school do.
Yeah.
And have you, I don't know if you had this experience, but I personally had this experience. As a Christian homeschooler, a lot of what I did in the homeschool community, since we were in a very, like, I guess in Tennessee, we were in the Bible Belt. In Florida, we were just in a very, like, Christian community type when it came to homeschooling. But there are secular homeschool communities. And so when I was, like, in my freshman year of high school, one of the extracurriculars that I was able to do was a group of homeschoolers. But I think I was the only Christian homeschooler there.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting, like, situation, because I was not used to being around other homeschoolers who weren't Christian. But at the same time, we had more similarities with each other than we did with somebody who was Christian in public school or not Christian in public school. Did you ever do anything with secular homeschoolers?
Not that I can recall off the top of my head. I just know that, like, how a person homeschooled acts socially versus a person who was public schooled acts socially in the same age group.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of my experiences when I think about this comes from when we went to youth group.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how interacting with the public school kids was very different, and you knew who the homeschool kids were.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they were in the corner.
Yeah, okay, see.
They were socializing.
Some of y'all out there, and I don't think it's a large portion of my audience, but some of y'all out there, okay?
Yeah.
Seem to have this idea that homeschoolers are weird, and that's why you can tell the difference between homeschoolers and public schoolers. I'm gonna let you in on a little secret here. I've met some socially awkward public schoolers.
You have?
Very socially awkward public schoolers.
It's almost like there's a stereotype for public school kids to be socially awkward.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I thought, according to everybody I've ever spoken to that was not a homeschooler and felt like, you know, insulting me,
yeah,
like,
honestly.
People seem to have this idea that, like, all homeschoolers are socially awkward, socially inept, cannot hold a conversation, are not outgoing, and it's the most interesting thing to me. Oh, and when they are outgoing, they're weird.
Mm-hmm.
That is what a lot of people seem to think, and that is why they say, I can tell the difference between a homeschooler and a public schooler. And you know what? That's not how I tell a difference between a homeschooler and a public schooler.
Yeah.
Crazily enough, I think when we're saying you must be public schooled, it's not this, like, condescending thing. It's more
no.
so this analyzing thing
yes.
of environment and how that affects a person.
And just watching their little behaviors, not necessarily being like, oh, I speak this way and, like, I am, like, lower intellectual mm-hmm. status. No, that's not what saying, oh, we can tell you're public schooled means.
Yeah. It's just, it's got a lot to do with how you interact with people your own age, with people who are your parents' age, mm-hmm. with people who are elderly, with little kids. Like, you can usually tell just by how somebody is interacting with all these different age groups
mm-hmm.
whether or not they were put in a school environment. Because, you know, I had a lot of friends growing up who were public schooled who had a really hard time talking to my parents. Like, some of them would yeah. never talk to my parents because they were scared of my parents. My parents are not scary people. My no. dad has maybe gotten gruffer with age, but when I was a kid, okay, we're talking clean shaven, like, skinny dad.
Oh, I did know
yes.
him then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, but, like, even before then, like, he was, like, looking less harmless when I was a kid, you know? So what's crazy to me is, like, a lot of public schoolers that I knew in middle school, high school, like, elementary, they could not have a, like, normal conversation or normal interaction with people who were our parents' age.
Yeah.
And so that was usually a pretty easy tell for me.
Mm-hmm. Same here. And just, like, not to stereotype public schoolers, but just, mm-hmm. like, the things they would talk about that they would find interesting.
And it's not so much, like, on the individual. It's more so, like, environment. Like, if you're around a lot of other kids your age, there are things that are expected. There's mm-hmm. like certain
social status.
Yes, there's a certain social status quo, and that's not exactly the same in
the homeschool
realm.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's also a lot more contempt for authority in
a lot more respect
public school.
Yeah.
In homeschool, there's more respect.
Yeah, that's how I view it.
Yeah, and it's not so much, trust me, I had a lot of contempt for authority. So I'm not saying that, you know, homeschoolers are like these meek little things and they don't ever have issues ever. I just mean in how they expressed themselves.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And how
yes.
you expressed yourself.
Yeah, how you were comfortable, dealing with situations that upset you.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of homeschoolers, yes, there are kids are going to handle things their ways, but I'm talking more so when you get to high school. Like, I noticed that, you know, the way that I would handle things, the way that some of my homeschool counterparts would handle things, was a lot more reserved, a lot more calm, a lot more socially acceptable in the adult world. It would be what we expect of adults
yeah.
versus some of these public school kids who had spent time only in an environment from a good chunk of their lives
yeah.
with people who were their age, and then the authority figures that they did have, some of them were not really worthy of that respect.
Yeah.
There was so it's like, why do I need to respect you because you don't respect me? Whereas I feel like in the homeschool world, even if you don't have that type of relationship with your parents or whatever, you still kind of get that in like homeschool co-op environments and stuff. Like a lot of parents are still going to interact with other people's kids. Like, okay, I'm here to teach you, but I want to listen to you too, you know? So it's just, it's a very different environment. And so you see kind of how the social environment kind of plays out in people's behavior.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting experience to like be able to like know in your head, oh, okay. Without even knowing beforehand.
Yeah. And there's some subjects that are, you know, kind of across the board. Like, obviously, you get to middle school, the girls are boy crazy, either whether you're homeschooled or not. It just happens.
Yeah.
Not all of us, okay? But there's always that huge group of girls that just all of a sudden is like, I like this person and I like this person. Who do you like?
And, like, you can't have this person because I like them.
Yeah. Gosh. But, yeah, so that's kind of across the board. But there were other things like, you know, like when it comes to like the sexual stuff, like I know that me and my friends and all of us like at co-op, most of us knew all the stuff that the public schoolers were talking about. We knew what they were talking about. Okay, we knew all the stuff, but we weren't like speculating who hasn't done this or who has done this or who did this with this person. Like that wasn't the lunchtime conversation. That wasn't the, you know, what we were.
That wasn't the topic of importance.
No, there were other things that we were discussing, even though we knew that those things existed and, you know, teenagers, okay, we're gonna, there's certain things that people want to do. It just wasn't like the subject of prevalence in our social conversations. There were other things that were more interesting to discuss in public.
In public.
Okay. And like, personally, you know, I went to a tutorial, a co-op ish thing. They called it a co-op. It was a tutorial. We'll get into the difference between those two things. But it was a homeschool group, okay, and they held classes. And so I went to that for my sophomore year of high school. And I didn't fully realize it at the time, but looking back, I think I understand why it was such a terrible experience for me. And, you know, I mean, I've always been a pretty confident person, like on the outside at least, as far as like, you know, the way I talk with other people, the way I express my opinions, you know, it's just kind of my thing. That's my personality.
You can have that thing.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I need it for this.
You can have all of mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want all of yours.
Like,
you might want a little bit.
No, I'm good with being quiet.
Oh, okay.
For the most part.
but yeah, so like looking back on it or whatever, I realized that like the reason that I had such a terrible time was just because of the social environment that was present in that homeschool group. And also looking back on it, I realized that the majority of the high school kids that were going to that homeschool group had just recently been pulled out of public school or had been in and out of public school their whole educational career or whatever. So these were people who had been in and out of public school or who had been in public school all the way up until ninth grade, 10th grade, whatever. And so they were still acting very much like they would act in a public school environment. So I got like relentlessly bullied for the first time in my life, which was just crazy to me because I was like, what is happening? I've never been in an environment where people are like this, you know, and it was for, you know, just stupid stuff like, you know, acne, not having nice clothes. God forbid somebody be low income. You know, how dare I wear the same shoes every week? That's apparently not okay. Like there were just certain things that like I just never, that had never been a part of my growing up experience that I experienced because some of those things are normal experiences when somebody goes to public school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and they're not good things either. So it'd be one thing if it was like good things that they brought over and I was experiencing, but it wasn't. And the
negative definitely showed through.
Yeah. And the topics of conversation were different because these kids had been to public school and they expected everybody to be talking about who had done what with who. And so they would ask very invasive questions that did not need to be discussed. And personally, I still feel like that, not because I'm uncomfortable with the topic, with the subject matter, you know,
because
you're children.
Yeah.
Kids don't need to be talking about stuff like that. Not in the explicit way that a lot of them do. You have to talk things out.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of unnecessary stuff that gets said. But it was very, a very crazy experience. So the social attitude is entirely different. And, you know, I'll tell you this right now. Kids are kids, okay? Kids are going to be mean sometimes.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they're homeschooled or public schooled or whatever, I've witnessed homeschoolers, you know, bullying other homeschoolers because, you know, it happened to my brother a few times. Mm-hmm. And I had to walk up to these high school boys and be like, why don't you go bully each other and leave my, like, elementary school brother alone? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things, but, you know, it's going to be across the board. But I do think that stuff like that, the bullying, the explicit conversation subject matter, it does not happen as much in homeschool environments.
No, not as much.
No. And so, I mean, obviously, kids are kids, teenagers are teenagers. There's stuff that comes up, but it's just very different. There's probably also a major difference in how bullying and that type of stuff is handled in homeschool settings versus public school settings. Mm-hmm. Like, how when you were being bullied in, like, you know, your younger years of public school, like, who found out about that? What was done about that?
Well, I would go tell the teacher, and then the teacher's just like, okay. And then, like, nothing would happen. And then, like, I keep going to the teacher over and over again every time it happened. And then the teacher told me to stop being a tattletale.
Hmm.
So that was healthy for my mental state as a child. And then when my mom would ask me, how was school? And I'd be like, miserable. And then she'd be like, why? And then I'd tell her about all the bullies and how, like, I was getting picked on because of what I looked like or what I did or my success in, like, those speed tests we did as a kid. It would just depend on what it was. And I had kids steal things from me that I had to, like, steal back because a teacher would not help me steal back. but when during those parent-teacher conferences, my mom would be like, hey, my kid's getting bullied, and I've had teachers bully me, okay?
Like, yes, going hand in hand with a recent episode that I did on some certain comments that were made about teachers by Megan Trainor and Hillsdale's president Larry Arn. They made some controversial comments. Go check that episode out. I'll put it in the cards.
You're welcome for that plug. But yes, I was bullied by my teachers. Like, I remember I was having a hard time because my dad was in the military and he would go away for training and drills and things like that, and I would miss him. And I came into class crying one day just because I missed my dad, and then my teacher told me to get over it and then sent me on the bus home, like, after school and everything, and then sent a note to my mom saying how I need to keep myself together during class.
And how old were you?
I was 7. 7 years old.
We love that. Expecting 7-year-olds to be able to
process their emotions.
Not cry. Expecting adults to be able to not cry in certain situations is like still a stretch, but expecting a 7-year-old to not cry when they miss their dad who's like been away for like a long time. Like, yeah,
especially when there's like a brand new family member. Because my sister was still a baby.
Yeah.
Like a brand new little baby.
Yeah. Hey, kids have a lot of emotions, and, you know, as adults, it's our responsibility to try to help them navigate that, not to shut them down.
Yeah, that happened a lot in public school. I was constantly shut down. honestly, it developed paranoia in me as a kid. Because, like, there's a whole, like, going to the bathroom situation.
Mm.
I felt crazy.
So stupid.
I had to keep going back to the teacher, like, making sure I asked permission that I went to the bathroom. And the teacher would start getting annoyed with me because I was making sure I asked. But that's a whole different thing. But, as a result of the whole, teacher telling me to, like, shut up and control myself, Mom went off. And there's also a few minor things that happened with other kids in the class who kind of witnessed this. One of them being my long-term bully for all 3 years, saying how her dad, who was a golf manager, her dad's job was more important than my dad's job as a military man. And, like, I know kids' perceptions, things of that nature. But, like, she would do stuff like that as a comparison bully.
To try to get a reaction.
To get a reaction out of me. And yeah. It worked. Because, of course it would work.
Yeah.
But when so many things like that were happening at the school and nothing was being done about it, that's when my mom found a way to come into the classroom. I don't remember what it's called. But she was able to, like, be a teacher's helper, is what it is, I think. And so she started being a teacher's helper in that teacher's classroom, and it was very, very funny. That's how I started, like, passing math, because my mom would actually sit there and help me. Not, like, do it for me or hold my hand. She would, like, take the time to explain what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time my mom being there, and they were, like, teaching us how to do cursive, and then they did a timed thing where we had to, like, write all these letters and the cursive format we just learned, and I was about to be in tears because no one was helping me.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing, is, like, these teachers, I'm like, even the good ones, it's more difficult to teach a classroom of 20, 30 kids than it's ever gonna be to teach 1, 2, 3, 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even 12 kids is easier than the classroom sizes that most schools have. And yeah. So a lot of teachers, their priority is not necessarily, okay, and don't come at me, okay? But a lot of teachers, their priority is not necessarily coming alongside students, making sure that they're good to go, making sure that they're learning. The priority is making sure that the classroom is in order and that people are sitting still and paying attention and whatever. Even if that means that there's one or two students getting left behind, it's like there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
So it's one of those situations where, you know, some people are able to teach in a way where they come alongside students, and some people are so focused on making sure everything is in order.
Making sure the majority passes.
Yes.
Like, one of the other bullies I had, he was held back a grade.
Mm.
And I think it was mainly focused on me, from what I can remember. His bullying, like, kicking me, hitting me, taunting me, calling me names, pulling my hair, all your stereotypical bully stuff.
Mm.
And when I would tell the teacher, I got the tattletale thing, and then, like, I remember the next day, like, after one of the times, I was, like, so done, walk in the class, the whole seating arrangement has changed in the classroom. Now me and the bully are sitting next to each other. And when asked, and I begged the teacher to move me, because he was kicking me. And
So your bully is sitting right next to you, literally interfering with your classroom time with his bullying, and you say to your teacher, hey, can you move me? Because my bully is literally kicking me during school.
Yeah.
And she says what?
She takes our desks and faces us back to back.
Mm.
Where he's still able to kick me and taunt me and harass me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all she did about it until my mom started being a teacher's helper.
And
pregnant. This was before my little sister was born. Pregnant.
Did you is that the same teacher that said that, like, you sitting next to him would make him a better person?
That is the same teacher.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're dealing with when it comes to some of the bullying that happens at public schools and some of the stuff that's done about it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been a conversation in school districts, you know, amongst parents, like, this, the whole problem of bullying has been a conversation for decades now. We all know this. It's why it's in all these movies and TV shows. Bullies exist. But, like, the thing is that when you throw a bunch of kids into an environment like that, there's going to be kids who are able to handle their emotions well, and then there's going to be kids who can't, and their only avenue, because there's nobody directly with them every day during that time, like, walking them through their emotions at that age, mm-hmm. their only avenue is to take it out on the people around them, and usually the people they can get away with doing that to are their fellow classmates.
Yeah.
So... But then you see in some schools, once they hit high school, you see that more and more happening where the kids are bullying the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder where that stems from. They're in environments where they're not being taught the things that you actually need to learn in order to function in life. And I know there's been all this conversation in public schools in recent years. I've listened to teachers talk about it, about teaching kids emotional regulation and breathing exercises and things like that. But it's never going to replace the actual, like, having your children at home with you,
yeah,
and being present in their lives as a parent and walking them through those things and it being a consistent everyday thing until they are able to do it on their own. It's mm-hmm. just, there's no way that sending them to school replaces some of the things that you are responsible for doing as a parent. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear it, but I mean, biblically, as parents, mm-hmm. it is the parents' responsibility to teach and train their child in the way that they should go. It is not the parents' responsibility to pawn them off on the state or to pay somebody else to do it. And I'm not saying that you have to be the one teaching, okay? I'm not mm-hmm. saying that you have to be the one doing everything, but you do need to be extremely involved in the teaching of your child if you want them to grow up a certain way. It's just the reality. It's yeah. not supposed to be the responsibility of the state. The responsibility of the parent. Sorry. But, okay, the second thing I wanted to talk about that I feel like a lot of new homeschoolers and non-homeschoolers don't really understand is the difference between co-ops and tutorials.
Yeah.
And I think even a lot of people who have been homeschooling for years don't really grasp the difference between co-ops and tutorials.
And honestly, people outside the homeschool world don't know what either of those things are.
Oh yeah, most definitely. When I, as a kid, I would tell people who weren't homeschoolers, like, oh, I go to co-op every Thursday. Yeah. They thought farmers co-op. Like, that's their immediate
thought. Like, I have to still explain it to people I meet who are adults. Like, not saying, like, huh, you don't know what a co-op is. It's just, like, I still have to keep explaining it to people what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. But... For those of you who don't know, or, you know what a co-op is or whatever, and you just don't understand the difference that I'm going to be making here, a co-op, okay, is pretty much, like a homeschool group that gets together once a week, once every 2 weeks, whatever, they get together a certain amount of times school year, and there are classes that kids of all ages can pretty much take. It's very family oriented. High school students, middle school students, kids, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a nursery. Okay. And the idea is that it's a community effort. It's a cooperative. Okay. All of the moms have some sort of responsibility. Some of the moms are more interested in science and that's their expertise and that's what they teach. They, you know, if it's, they're better with younger kids, they teach an elementary school level science or they teach a high school science if they're like, you know, really knowledgeable about it. Like all these moms come together and they bring their different strengths in mm-hmm. teaching together and they teach classes for these kids that for the most part a lot of the moms in that group are not going to teach at home, especially when it comes to high school level stuff.
Yes.
If there's one mom who's really like, you know, math minded, okay, and there's a lot of parents who are like would much rather have somebody else try to figure out algebra with their kid, then that mom is going to teach an algebra class and the high schoolers are going to take the algebra class. You know, and it just depends on how big the co-op is, but, you know, usually you can get a pretty good slew of class options for every single grade level. And, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of the times, because, you know, you're kind of catering to what different families need, a lot of the pregnant moms or the nursing moms or the moms with littles, they'll end up, their service hour is not necessarily teaching a course. It's more so, they're watching all the babies in the nursery or they're, mm-hmm. you know, teaching a toddler play class or a Bible class or something like that with the little ones so that they can be with their kids instead of having to have somebody else watch them when they're still real little. So there's a lot more community effort into a co-op.
Very much community-based.
Yeah. And the thing about co-ops, too, is that the idea is that because the moms are the ones doing the work, that the only cost, really, is materials for the courses and sometimes cost of, like, where you're holding it. But, mm-hmm. you know, and increasingly I'm seeing a lot more churches charge homeschool groups.
Yeah, and subsequently kicking those groups
yeah,
out.
Yeah, kicking homeschool groups out because they decide to start charging. When really, if we're looking at it like, you know, you're a church, you are a Christian organization, if you have space for a homeschool group to meet, especially a Christian homeschool group, why you are not using that as a way to outreach, mm-hmm. I do not understand. Why you are charging them as if they are a private school or a public school making money off of it, I do not understand. Because co-ops are the moms doing all the work, okay, yeah. for their children. And a lot of times they're teaching values that you as a church would probably agree with. So there's absolutely no reason to be charging these co-ops anything to set up at your church. You should be encouraging yeah. it.
Yeah, and as a church, you're supposed to be reflective of that community aspect. Like, you are welcoming the homeschoolers into your community. I mean, that's how I started going to this one church. Like, I started going because of the co-op that was founded there.
Exactly. So, it's just kind of one of those things where if you're a church and you're being a little too business-minded, knock it off.
That's not what church is.
Yeah. Quit being a business. Be a church. Be God's people. Okay, I'll be done. But yeah, so that's kind of like co-ops. Like, I know the first co-op that my family and I ever did, I think it was like, when we first started doing it, I think it was like $35 a semester mm-hmm. per family. Because the idea was that if everybody contributes $35 a semester, that's going to cover all the, you know, resources and stuff that we need to conduct certain classes. And sometimes if it was a high school class where you needed specific, you know, like if it was a drawing class, okay, and you needed specific pencils and paper and whatever, mm-hmm. sometimes that was, you just went and bought that stuff on your own. Sometimes there was an additional fee for the teacher to provide it. It just depended, but it was a very cheap option for mm-hmm. homeschool families to come together and learn things in a different way and have a community and hang out and have social time
yeah.
and make friends and all of that stuff. So that's kind of the idea of a co-op. Now, when I was probably hitting middle school age is when I started hearing more and more about these tutorials. And tutorials are more like, they're more like school, honestly, mm-hmm. If you ask me. And the way that happens is because a lot of tutorials, they're not being taught by moms.
Right.
They're being taught by tutors. So a lot of these tutors, they're either former public school teachers or they tutor for a living, or sometimes they are the homeschool moms who, you know, got a specific degree in something and tutor it already. Like, these are people who were already getting paid for their services that the tutorial has now brought in to teach classes. Mm-hmm. And so the difference here, the biggest difference, at least in my opinion, is that it is insanely more expensive yes. to go to a tutorial.
Very expensive.
Yes. Sometimes, depending on where you are going, you're looking at like $300 a class.
$100, like in total sometimes.
Yeah. And the thing is that what happens with tutorials is it ends up being a lot less family-oriented. It ends up being a lot less community-oriented because what happens is families can't afford to take all five of their children to this tutorial because mm-hmm. it's so insanely expensive. So what happens is a lot of the time it'll be like a parent that was looking for, you know, a biology with lab course. okay, they wanted to not do the dissecting owl pellets at home. They wanted to send their child off to someone else to do that. Okay. Because yeah. Sometimes that stuff gets a little gross.
And smelly.
And smelly. But, you know, so say that's the situation. And, you know, and they have a whole slew of kids, different age ranges, but they can only afford a certain amount. And so they send their one child to this tutorial for one course, and it ends up costing like anywhere from $200 to $600, $700 for the whole school year. Okay, it just depends on where, what, you know, the price range is. But it does get up there, especially if you have more than one kid taking more than one course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's honestly just ridiculous. Especially at the tutorials where most of the people teaching are other homeschool moms. It's like, I get it. You should be paid for your knowledge and for your work. But in these environments, it very much gets rid of the community-based mindset. It very much gets rid of what yeah. homeschooling is all about. So, yeah, there's that. And the other thing with tutorials is a lot of them are not little kid-friendly.
No.
There's not a nursery, okay? There's not...
It's mainly high school level, honestly.
Mainly high school level, and some of them offer, like, middle school level stuff. And even the ones that do offer younger kid courses... they're insanely expensive younger kid courses.
Mm-hmm.
And they should not be that expensive at all. So that there's that. And what ends up happening with tutorials too, when you have these former public school teachers coming in to teach courses, is you get a lot more of the public school vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. So you get a lot more of the public school vibe. The most boring classes I ever took were taught by former public school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I am sorry to those public school teachers, but you were not entertaining. You did not make it exciting. I'm sorry. It was just really bad. And mm-hmm. I could tell that you came from a public school, because I was always used to being taught by moms who were trying to make it fun and make it exciting and get you to want to learn. Even mm-hmm. the subjects I hated and the classes I hated, you could still tell that the person put effort into trying to engage the kids. And instead, what happens with, or what happened in a lot of my classes that were taught by former public school teachers was... it was exactly like public school. They were using the same type of approach. They were using the same type of mm-hmm. curriculum. It just was not it. Sorry. let's see. There was something else that's different. Oh, the schedule for tutorials. That's also different. A lot of tutorials now are doing like kind of a college model. So classes, mm-hmm. they'll hold classes like Tuesdays and Thursdays of each week during the school year,
yeah.
or Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays of each week during the school year. You also see a lot more public schoolers who start homeschooling gravitate towards tutorials because it's so similar to school.
Yeah.
And because,
they
can
send their kids away and
yeah,
not and be involved.
Yeah. And because they're paying so much money for each course,
yeah.
it's kind of expected that that's a good enough level course that the grades
yeah,
come back.
That's something I did want to touch on. Like, price does not equal quality.
Exactly.
Like, you can still have a quality high education with minimal resources.
Yeah. Yeah. No, spending that much money is completely unnecessary until you get, like, to the point where you want to take college courses. Then it's mm-hmm. kind of not negotiable, but
yeah, unfortunately.
But before your kids get to college age or dual credit age, okay, like, it is so not necessary to spend that much on classes, and usually it doesn't really, it's not really worth it. You went to one homeschool co-op.
Yes.
And I went to, I went to three homeschool co-ops and one tutorial throughout my homeschool years.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of our different family lifestyles and how that all pans out. But, so I, like, firsthand experienced the difference between co-ops and tutorials, and she secondhand experienced it through my wonderful storytelling abilities.
Yes.
You know, and my ability to articulate language. but yeah, no, it's just entirely different, and a lot of people will call tutorials co-ops, and I see more and more the concept of a co-op being kind of muddied,
mm-hmm.
you know, by this tutorial
Like, it's trying to become something it's not.
Yeah, and so a lot of people call these tutorials co-ops, and it's just, it's not. It's a tutorial. Yeah. You're paying tutors an insane amount of money to educate your kids. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. It's just, don't call it a co-op, because it's not a cooperative. Sorry.
Yeah. Whole point of the name co-op.
Yeah. It's supposed to be, like, working together, community effort. All of the family is going and showing up.
Every single family pitches in something.
Yeah, and it's involved. And, like, and your understanding, hypothetically, of each family's, like, ability to commit. And, like, you know, it's one of those things, right? But another question. Did you ever have a standalone tutor?
No, I never had, a personal tutor for anything.
Okay. I did... once, I think.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, I got... okay, so when I was in high school, I, you know, you take the SAT and the ACT if you're trying to get into college, whatever. So I had taken the SAT a few times, and it just wasn't really going that well, because once we got to higher math, I wasn't really interested in it. I hated it. Hmm. And so I never really did my math. So that was part of the problem. Like, I did, once I actually took an algebra course, like, in person, I aced it. When I did college algebra, I aced it. So it wasn't that, like, I just couldn't figure out math. It was just that I hated it, and so I wasn't really doing it to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time for me to take the SATs, I was not doing as well as I could have because I wasn't caught up to date on my math. So my mom and I did go get a math tutor to kind of catch me up to speed on what was expected of me with the SATs.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it didn't help. It really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit seeing the tutor, and I just went to the community college and took college algebra. And then I took the state test again, or the country test again, whatever you call it. I took the SATs again, and I did way freaking better. So all it took was me just actually taking a course and it being fresh in my memory.
Mm-hmm. But it's usually how it works, I think.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So what conversation, to switch to topics here very rather abruptly, what conversation, if any, have you heard about school choice in the homeschool community?
I've heard frustration. that's mainly it. Like, just overhearing things my mom talks about, or things you and I have discussed, mm-hmm. like, frustration is the key emotion.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are confused by the fact that a lot of homeschoolers don't want school choice. I think that there's a... It's a big narrative in the Republican Party on the conservative side of things. Like, a lot of people who do not homeschool, who are on that side of things, they want school choice very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, don't really understand that. But those of you who have been keeping up with the podcast and have watched every single one or listened to every single one know that I do write for the Tennessee Conservative newspaper. And... actually, during this legislative session, there were several bills regarding school choice that got brought up. And so I actually got assigned to write several of them. And it was pretty consistent for about 2 weeks that I was covering these specific bills. And I remember talking to Shauna about it because I was like, for some reason, I'm getting this, like, ick. Like, I don't want to write these articles.
Like a big ick.
Yes, a big one. Yes. And, like, it wasn't bad enough to where I was like, hey, I don't want to write this, because the people I write for are great. Like, they would have been like, okay, you don't want to write it, let me find something else, we'll switch article assignments around. Like, I'm sure it would have been fine, but if I really had, like, some sort of problem with it. But it wasn't that bad. It was just more along the lines of, like, it felt weird to talk about school choice and not give my opinion as a homeschooler and mm-hmm. not sort of like stand up for my homeschool community, because they are objective articles, and mm-hmm. the thing is too, is like objective in the news is like, it's not objective.
It's not objective.
I don't believe humans can be objective, to be honest, but.
Yeah, I agree with that. As a human, you have your own experiences in life, and that creates a bias.
Yeah, just automatically. If everything you're writing is not opinionated, there's still something in there. That's mm-hmm. how you end up with, like, articles from the Tennessean, and I'm sure, depending on the state you're in, there's plenty of newspapers like this, where it is technically objective journalism. It's not an op-ed, but it's clearly left-leaning news.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it is when I write for the Tennessee Conservative. Like, you know, it's supposed to be objective. It's not an opinion article, but, you know, the person reading it, like the audience, is conservative. So, you know,
it's like going, looking at it through a conservative lens.
Yeah. So it is like reading it, you can kind of tell that a conservative is writing it. But the problem there lies in the fact that a lot of the conservative movement, like I said, is behind, like they favor school choice. Like they yeah. want school choice. So I was having kind of a hard time with all of that. And, like, having my name attached to something that I wasn't, like, clarifying my opinion on. But yeah. it's all good. And I'll get into why homeschoolers don't like school choice in a mm-hmm. minute. But the way I see it here in Tennessee, school choice is stupid. And
yes.
that is because I don't know if other states have done it more efficiently. I don't know if there's been, like, success in this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much money other states have put into this. I just know that in Tennessee, we don't have official school choice yet. Okay, we have a pilot program that's, I think, started like last year or the year before or something, maybe 2021. And it's supposed to go on for the next couple years at least. But it's a pilot program to kind of gather data and figure out if this is something that we're going to do across the whole state. And a lot of the Republican Party push, a lot of the conservative push is get it in all counties across the state. And right now it's only in a few counties. It was only one or two, I think it was two counties. And then during this legislative session, they expanded it to a few more counties, this pilot program. But the way it works is that students or families of students mm-hmm. in these counties can pretty much, take the amount of money that their public school is getting for that student, and they can take that amount of money and they can go elsewhere with it.
Which isn't a huge amount, honestly.
No, it's not. Therein lies my point that we'll get to. But yeah, and during this pilot program, at least, it wouldn't be the case if we had official school choice across the state, but during this pilot program, if a student takes their allotment of money and goes elsewhere, the public school will still get that money. Like it's mm-hmm. like they're putting additional money towards these students to be able to go elsewhere, and the public school is still getting what they would get for that student. But yeah, these students can pretty much go find a different public school, find a charter school, find a private school, or homeschool using that allotment of money that the state would typically give to the public school that they attend. Now, the problem here that I see, even if I'm looking at it through a non-homeschooler lens, mm-hmm. is what is the public school allotment per child going to cover? A student can, yeah, take that money and go to a different public school if there's a better one closer to them or close to them. A student might be able to take that to a charter school. They might be able to take that with them in homeschool. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, private school?
That's not possible.
It's not possible. You realize how much private school costs. And I don't know if they've done this in other states where they have the funding to actually send public school students who don't have the money to go to private school to private school with public school money. It is not a thing here in Tennessee. I'm sorry, the amount of money that these kids are getting to go elsewhere is not enough to pay for private school.
Yeah.
And the way that I see this going on, like down the line, if school choice is made official and is available across the state, like right now, the pilot program is only available to lower income students. So in that case, private school is just not an option in general.
Yeah.
But if school choice just keeps getting expanded and expanded and expanded, okay, I see it as it just really ending up being a situation where students from families who can already kind of afford private school or can totally afford private school, pretty much just get a discount
yeah.
on private school. That's where I see this going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say maybe I just don't know what I'm talking about, but honestly, I think I know about as much as our state legislature does because I tuned in to so many discussions about school choice, and there were so many legislators who had no, like, they really just were they kept asking, like, I need more clarification on what this is actually going to look like, what this is actually going to do. And, like, people weren't there to explain it. And, like, it was just a mess, if you ask me. And then there were people who were like, it's clear what it does, and we don't need somebody to explain it, and, like, all this stuff. But I'm like, like, literally, what does it look like?
Yeah.
In the span of a decade, 2 decades? Like, what does it look like? Is it going to be expanded to people who don't need that money? And, like, and then if it's only towards low-income students, like, are they actually able to go to private school? Like, it just, it's, yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. It's not financially possible, at least not with this pilot program. And I just don't understand it. But the reason a lot of homeschoolers are against school choice is that when you take the state money and you start putting it towards your homeschooling, okay, you're getting involved with the government again. You're allowing the government to get involved in your child's education.
And when was that a good thing?
Yes, when was that a good thing?
When did we let government, anyone, either party, when?
During COVID, apparently.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
They're the experts. But yeah, so the problem comes in is, like, you're kind of muddying the waters, again, of who is really in control of your child's education. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, one of those situations that I talk about where it's not necessarily that this one thing is going to derail the whole, like, homeschool freedom, okay? But it's little things over time, okay? Big agendas take time, mm-hmm. okay? So you have little baby steps over time, and eventually...
It's a domino effect.
Yeah, 50 years later, what do you have? And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you have a lot of people who fought criticism and fought for a lot of legislation to make sure that homeschooling was legal and stayed legal. And now I think... those same people feel like if we pass school choice the way that it's being presented to us with this homeschooling option, it's pretty much literally taking a step backwards when it comes to the independence and freedom of homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Literally just take homeschool out of these bills and the homeschool community would be fine with it.
Yeah.
Like,
that's all, like, I think that's the only thing that would resolve it, really.
I mean... there are homeschoolers that would happily take the money, but it really is, to a lot of us, it feels like very much a backdoor approach to try to get control over the homeschoolers again. When the whole point is that we do not want to be associated with the government schools. We do not want to be controlled in our curriculum choices. We do not want to be controlled in what we can and can't teach our kids. And when you start letting other entities control mm-hmm. what your kids are being taught, what you can buy with that money, whatever it is,
yeah,
however that plays out over the next decades, okay?
Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's like brings up an argument that a lot of people have against homeschooling. It's like, well, we want our child's education to be regulated. We want to make sure they are learning what they need to learn. And it's just like, you're doing that.
Learning what they need to learn according to who? Just saying, because there's a lot of things that are required learning that are part of the curriculum, that are part of the way that that things are taught in public schools, mm-hmm. that are not necessary, that are detrimental to your child's education. And there's just a lot of, it's a stupid argument. I'm sorry.
yeah, and you can teach your child. Don't let someone come up to you and say, just because you don't have a degree in education or a certification or whatever, you can still teach your child.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things that homeschool moms probably deal with.
Yes.
I know there's homeschool dads too, but it's just mostly homeschool moms because how the family structure ends up a lot of the time. But homeschool dads too, okay? Homeschool parents, mm-hmm. one of the biggest things that they probably hear throughout the span of their child's education is, are you a teacher? Are you certified in teaching? What did you go to school for? Like, mm-hmm. and, you know, and that's what Shauna's gotten a lot of when she says she's homeschooling her kids.
I've had several conversations and arguments, honestly, over people saying, like, I can't be a teacher to my own children because I only went to school for graphic design, mm-hmm. which is just like, what?
What? You can teach your children. That's pretty much the conclusion here, is you can teach your children. And I do want to say one more thing about the school choice thing, just to put it into perspective, and then we'll wrap up. But, okay, it's kind of like this whole, the whole school choice thing for homeschooling, okay, it's kind of like the state and the government is just dangling this carrot in front of homeschool parents. They're going, hey, here's this money. It's a money carrot. Come get it. come get it. We'll pay for all the things that you were paying for out of pocket, all the things that you were, you know, scrounging money for. We'll cover it. And then what happens is the parents take that little money carrot, okay, and then they don't have control over their children's education. They don't have the ability to homeschool the way that you should be allowed to homeschool, 10 years down the line. And, you know, where is the control? Where is the control always? Where the money's at. Control, money. Money, control. We've seen it play out in a variety of circumstances. So that is why homeschoolers have a problem with school choice. That is why we do not want school choice. Take homeschoolers out of the bill. Problem solved. There you go. Now, if you enjoyed this special blue-haired conservatives episode of Subtle Rampage Podcast and you want to see more of me and my beautiful co-host, okay, make sure that you follow the podcast, because guess what? You want to guess?
What?
Oh, we have more content coming soon.
Oh, we do?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
The two of us.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool. I can't wait.
Okay, and you want to know what that content is about? Well, our next episode is specifically about higher education, what that was like for both of us, you know, going from homeschool to college setting. You know, a lot of people have questions about that. Stupid questions, but questions.
Very stupid.
But yeah, so we're going to talk about what it was like to go to college as homeschoolers. We're going to talk about some of the stuff that happened on college campuses and in that arena during COVID. All of that wonderful stuff. And we're just going to talk about what it's like to be a conservative on a college campus in general. But that's about it. We'll see you next week. Bye.